Imagine you're a military commander, right? You're staring at a radar screen.
Right, highly stressful situation.
Exactly. And a target is coming in fast. So to protect your base, you give the order to fire an advanced interceptor missile. You hit the target, the base is safe.
Mission accomplished, theoretically.
Right. But then you actually sit down and do the math, you realize you just spent like $4 million to destroy a drone that cost your enemy the price of a used Honda Civic.
Yeah, which is just a complete mathematical nightmare.
It really is. And that is the exact nightmare the US military is waking up to this morning. I mean, we usually picture modern warfare as this, you know, the showcase of exquisite engineering, billion-dollar stealth jets, impenetrable warships, that kind of thing.
And for a long time it was. But we're looking at a landscape right now where those pristine, ultra-expensive platforms are basically being paralyzed by this explosion of cheap, mass-produced drones and, well, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, totally paralyzed.
It forces a complete rethinking of what power actually means on a modern battlefield. Like, we are literally witnessing the era of traditional localized combat colliding head-on with autonomous technology that scales, way faster than traditional defense budgets can even handle.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today we are looking at a really fascinating stack of recent intelligence updates, think tank reports from CSIS, and some eye-opening military research from KSI, that's the China Aerospace Studies Institute.
Some really heavy reading, but incredibly important.
Oh, absolutely. And our mission today is to trace this collision across the globe. You know, we want to understand how this dynamic is playing out everywhere, from the current U.S. and Iran conflict to the brutal front lines in Ukraine, and ultimately how it's forcing the U.S. and China to completely rewrite the rules of air power in the Pacific.
Yeah, the ripple effects are everywhere.
Okay, let's unpack this. And I think we should start with the most immediate tactical reality on the board right now, which is the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, the Middle East is serving as the ultimate stress test for this exact problem.
Right.
The ongoing conflict between the U.S. and Iran is really exposing the immense strain that asymmetric warfare places on traditional resources.
Yeah.
Like, take Operation Epic Fury, the U.S. air campaign against Iran.
Which is currently on a tense pause, right?
Exactly, a very tense pause. The latest intelligence updates note the U.S. hasn't actually conducted strikes since July 24th.
And that was because President Trump ordered that pause after an Omani delegation arrived in Tehran to negotiate reopening the Strait of Hormuz.
Right, so there's diplomatic movement. But a pause from Washington definitely doesn't mean the theater is actually quiet.
Oh, not even close. I mean, Iran's proxies are aggressively filling that space. You've got the Houthis blockading Saudi Red Sea oil transits.
Yeah, they're not holding back at all.
No, they are actively hitting infrastructure in major port cities, like Yanbu and Hodeidah. They're basically trying to physically strangle energy supplies.
Which, makes it exponentially more expensive for Saudi Arabia to sustain its own military operations.
Right. But it's not just the proxies and the cheap drones causing the headache. The intelligence outlines the specific weapons Iran is fielding itself, particularly these K-bar Chicken medium-range ballistic missiles.
Oh yeah, those are a massive
But
thing.
these things are actually slipping past U.S. defenses.
They are, and it really comes down to the sheer mechanics of how the missile operates.
How so?
Well, the K-bar Chicken utilizes this detachable warhead-bearing nose cone.
Wait, so it actually detaches in midair?
Yes. During its terminal phase, so right as it's plunging toward its target, it speeds up to like 6,000 miles per hour. That nose cone physically separates and maneuvers. It adjusts its trajectory.
Wow, 6,000 miles an hour and dodging.
Exactly. When a threat is coming in that incredibly fast and unpredictably changing its path, traditional intercept algorithms just struggle to calculate the intercept point.
So to hit a bullet that is actively dodging, you need incredibly sophisticated defense systems.
Right.
And that brings us to the shocking data from the CSIS report regarding U.S. stockpiles. This blew my mind. Patriot missile inventories are now under 1,000.
Which is dangerously low.
And TUA interceptors, which, just for context, are designed specifically for those high-altitude ballistic threats, they are down to around 250.
Yeah, 250 for the entire global inventory.
So my immediate thought reading this is, if we are running dangerously low, we have the biggest defense budget in the world. Just spin up the factories and build more.
I mean, I get that reaction, but you just can't flip a switch on these systems.
Why not?
Because a TAD interceptor is not some mass-produced consumer good. Mm. It requires highly specialized microelectronics, these incredibly complex solid propellant rocket motors, and a massive, slow-moving global supply chain.
So it's not Amazon Prime.
No, not at all. It takes years to replenish these stockpiles. And what's fascinating here is that this depletion threatens U.S. readiness globally.
Right, because you can't be everywhere at once.
Exactly. If you burn through your high-end interceptors defending bases in one theater, say, the Middle East, against a relentless mix of drones and maneuvering missiles, you literally leave your forces exposed everywhere else on the map.
Like using a Ferrari to deliver a single pizza. I mean, sure, it works, but you're going to go bankrupt doing it.
That is a perfect way to put it, honestly.
And the pressure in the Middle East is only compounding. Mm. There's this new intelligence suggesting Iran's supreme leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, is actively pursuing a thermonuclear weapon.
Yeah, that was a major red flag in the reports.
Now, the sources do clarify that the June 2025 war disabled a massive chunk of their enrichment infrastructure, so their actual capacity is degraded.
True. But the intent is still there. And that intent forces the U.S. to maintain this massive presence in the region.
Which requires protecting those bases, mm-hmm. which drains those exact interceptor stockpiles we just talked about.
It's a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that financial and logistical bleeding doesn't happen in a vacuum. Adversaries are watching this math, and they are actively cooperating to accelerate it.
You mean Russia?
Yeah. Ukrainian President Zelensky recently disclosed that Russia is actually providing Iran with satellite imagery of U.S. bases in the Gulf.
Wow. Just openly handing over the targeting data.
Pretty much. They are helping Iran optimize their strikes and conduct battle damage assessments.
And that dynamic using cheap tech and shared intelligence to overwhelm expensive traditional militaries, it's playing out aggressively in Europe right now, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Over in Ukraine, the Russian offensive is just grinding forward with massive, massive casualties. Putin is entirely refusing to freeze the front line.
Even though the Kazakh president directly urged him to negotiate.
Right. But Putin is just demanding full capitulation. Specifically, he's demanding the Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson regions.
All while pushing this narrative of national unity to the State Duma to justify the staggering human cost.
And that cost is so severe that Russia is preparing to receive 30,000 North Korean troops just to sustain their operational tempo.
It really highlights how desperate they are for manpower.
But the human attrition on the ground is only half the story, really. The drone war is fundamentally reshaping the battle space there.
Yeah, Ukraine is adapting incredibly fast.
They are conducting deep strikes incredibly far behind enemy lines. Like, they recently hit the Taiman oil refinery, which is nearly 2,000 kilometers from the front line.
2,000 kilometers. That is a massive distance for a drone strike.
And they're utilizing low-cost, mass-produced weapons like these Dutch Ruta Block 1 cruise missiles, just completely bypassing traditional air defenses.
And when you force Russia to pull their air defenses back to protect their refineries deep inland, it suddenly opens up the airspace right at the front.
Which is huge for Ukraine. The reports even highlight that a Ukrainian F-16 recently scored its first air-to-air kill against a Russian fighter.
That's a major milestone.
Yeah, but I think the most mind-bending shift is happening in the water.
The naval stuff is wild.
It really is. In response to these devastating Ukrainian drone strikes, the Russian Navy is officially forming dedicated unmanned systems regiments.
Yeah, they started with the Northern Fleet in July. And are already expanding that to the Pacific.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
How does a massive, multi-billion-dollar Russian warship, equipped with radar that can literally see for hundreds of miles, get repeatedly crippled by what is essentially a remote-controlled jet ski packed with explosives? Like, does this mean the era of the giant traditional warship is just ending?
It's a totally fair question. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it really comes down to radar horizons and just the physical environment of the sea.
Okay, break that down for me.
So naval radar is optimized to look up and out, right? It's searching for aircraft or large incoming missiles breaking the horizon.
Right, looking for big threats in the sky.
Exactly. But a waterborne drone is small. It's usually made of fiberglass or composite materials, and it rides incredibly low in the water.
So the radar basically just doesn't see it.
It just gets lost in the wave clutter on a radar screen. By the time the ship's sensors can actually distinguish the drone from a wave, it might only be a mile or two away.
Oh, wow.
And if that drone is coming at you at 50 knots, that gives the ship's crew mere seconds to manually target and destroy it.
Seconds? That's terrifying.
Now imagine Ukraine sends a swarm of them from multiple angles at the exact same time. Traditional layered naval defense simply collapses.
It's just too much to process. So we have the U.S. draining its critical interceptor stockpiles in the Middle East and Russia literally reorganizing its traditional naval structure just to survive cheap sea drones.
Yeah, the big guys are struggling.
And when you look at the global board, the biggest strategic benefactor of all this attrition is China.
Without a doubt. The CSIS analysis is very explicit about this. The munitions being expended in the Middle East create a severe near to medium term risk for U.S. readiness against China.
Because they're watching us use up all our best stuff.
Exactly. Mm. Military planners are staring down the Davidson window.
And that's the 2027 timeline for potential Chinese military action against Taiwan, right?
Yes. 2027 is coming up fast.
And Washington is scrambling to fix the math before that window opens. Like, the Trump administration requested a $95 billion defense budget alongside a $21 billion war supplemental, heavily focused on rebuilding these exact interceptor inventories.
But it's turned into a massive political dogfight.
It always is. Congress is battling the White House over guardrails on this proposed Trump-class battleship program. They are demanding that the underlying weapons technology is actually fully mature before they start bending steel.
Which makes sense. You don't want to build a ship for weapons that don't exist yet. But meanwhile, Taiwan isn't waiting for the U.S. to sort out its supply chains.
No, they are moving fast.
They see what is happening to the Russian Black Sea Fleet, and they're adopting that exact playbook. Taiwan is aggressively pushing a $6.6 billion attack drone plan, and they've already ordered dozens of sea drones.
So they are building an asymmetric defense specifically designed to overwhelm Chinese naval assets in the exact same way Ukraine is crippling Russia's.
It's the drone swarm strategy.
And the temperature in the region is just boiling right now. Trump has been discussing Taiwan arms sales directly with Xi Jinping, and a Chinese ship recently opened fire in Japan's economic zone in the South China Sea.
Tensions are incredibly high.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If you want to understand how a war in the Pacific would actually unfold, you have to understand how China is planning to target its enemies. And spoiler alert, it is not traditional warfare.
Not at all. To see the blueprint, we really have to look at the research from KSI.
Right, the China Aerospace Studies Institute.
Yeah. They analyzed native language Chinese military doctrine. And what they found is that the PLA China's military is obsessed with transitioning from what they call mechanized warfare to intelligentized warfare.
Intelligentized warfare.
Yeah. The entire goal is to master the kill process.
Okay, let's break down the evolution of that because the terminology they use really tells the whole story. The baseline military concept we've used for decades is the kill chain.
Right, the classic kill chain.
And a kill chain is basically a linear, step-by-step checklist to hit a target. You find it, fix its location, track it, target it, engage with a weapon, and assess the damage.
It's very sequential.
It's like a single highway. If one link in that chain breaks, say your radar gets jammed at step two, the mission stops. It fails.
Which is a huge vulnerability. So militaries naturally evolved to the kill web.
A web, okay.
Instead of a single highway, a kill web is more like a city grid.
Yeah.
If a sensor goes down, you have alternate routes and different nodes you can tap into to get the targeting data to the weapon.
It was much more resilient.
Yes. In fact, U.S. Space Force General Saltzman recently warned that China has already fielded a highly advanced satellite-enabled kill web that currently holds U.S. forces at risk.
But the CSI report says China isn't stopping at a web. Their ultimate goal for intelligentized warfare is the kill mesh.
Yeah, the kill mesh is the apex of this evolution. It is a hyper-networked, AI-driven collection of nodes across space, cyber, air, and sea.
So what's the difference between a web and a mesh?
The critical distinction is that a kill mesh requires artificial intelligence algorithms to independently determine the sequence of steps to hit a target. There is no predetermined route whatsoever.
Oh, wow. So if you're wondering how this actually changes things, think about the algorithms you interact with every day. The CSI research explicitly notes that the PLA is looking at commercial order management technology.
Like ride-hailing apps or food delivery services?
Exactly. When you open an app for a ride, an algorithm instantly evaluates dozens of variables, right? Driver location, traffic patterns, fuel levels, user ratings.
It processes all of that in milliseconds. It just magically pairs you with a car.
Now translate that commercial algorithm to a battlefield.
It's terrifying, honestly. Say a satellite spots a U.S. aircraft carrier. Instead of sending that data to a human command center to slowly, deliberate over which weapon to use, the AI algorithm just takes over. It instantly evaluates the fuel levels of nearby drone swarms, the payload capacity of a distant submarine, the current radar threat in the area, and it dynamically matches the absolute optimal weapon to the target in real time.
Like water flowing around rocks, it's unstoppably finding the path of least resistance. It's basically outsourcing the trigger to bypass human reaction time entirely.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the goal of a kill mesh is to completely remove human bottleneck speeds from warfare.
Because humans are too slow.
Way too slow. If you have to wait for a human commander to look at a screen, interpret the data, and verbally give an order over a radio, you have already lost. The AI algorithm operates instantly.
Which brings us to a massive question. If China is building an AI-directed kill mesh, and adversaries are already overwhelming our multi-million-dollar interceptors with cheap drones in the Middle East, how on earth is the United States adapting to this?
Well, for this, we have to turn to a recent CSIS panel that featured some top Air Force thinkers.
General Jim Slaife and Lieutenant General Clint Hinoutright.
Yes. And they were analyzing recent U.S. air campaigns. What they revealed is that the U.S. is executing a dramatic shift in how it projects air power.
Moving away from what we did for the last two decades.
Right. For 20 years, during the global war on terror, the Air Force operated decentrally. They basically provided counterinsurgency overwatch.
Just flying in circles and uncontested airspace, waiting for a radio call from ground troops to drop a bomb.
Exactly. But recent campaigns mark a sharp return to highly centralized, massive, orchestrated strikes in heavily contested environments.
And the logistics involved in these recent operations are just staggering. Take Operation Absolute Resolve.
Oh, that was a massive undertaking.
The U.S. used 150 aircraft to capture Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela in exactly 2.5 hours without losing a single plane.
Incredible coordination.
Or Operation Midnight Hammer, where B-2 stealth bombers flew all the way from the continental United States, refueled in midair, bypassed early warning systems, struck Iranian nuclear sites in a single night, and flew home.
Just a flawless execution of traditional air power.
And then Epic Fury, where they hit 13,000 targets in Iran over 6 weeks.
So those operations prove that the U.S. can absolutely still pull off exquisite, highly complex engineering feats. But, and this is a huge but, the generals on the panel issued a really stark warning.
What was the warning?
They said that despite the tactical success of taking out radar sites and missile facilities in Epic Fury, the strategic success is incredibly murky.
Why is it murky if they hit all their targets?
Because while a billion-dollar B-2 bomber is executing a flawless strike, the adversary is just launching a $500 drone that crashes right into the forward operating base where U.S. support aircraft are parked.
Oh, man. So you win the battle in the air, but lose your fleet on the ground.
Exactly. It's the readiness gap.
Ugh.
The panel emphasized that running these massive continuous campaigns just burns out the fleet.
You skip scheduled maintenance.
Right.
You burn through flight hours. And if your billion-dollar jets are grounded for repairs, they're sitting ducks for a cheap drone swarm.
Exactly. So the Air Force knows this. And they are developing new tactics to survive. And the main concept right now is blending the exquisite with the attritable.
And attritable basically means cheap, expendable technology, right? Stuff you don't mind losing.
Yes. The generals detailed this fascinating tactic of hiding highly advanced, expensive munitions inside a literal cloud of cheap one-way attack drones.
Okay, wait. So you launch hundreds of low-cost drones at an enemy air defense system simultaneously.
Yes.
It's essentially a DDoS attack on the enemy's radar system.
That is exactly what it is.
Like, just like hackers overwhelm a computer server with too much traffic until it crashes, this drone cloud floods the enemy radar with thousands of potential targets.
The processing power of the defense system is completely overwhelmed. They just don't know what to shoot at. And hidden inside that chaotic noise is your high-end precision stealth weapon that just slips through and takes out the target.
Wow, that is the precise mechanism. You blind their sensors with sheer volume.
But executing these new tactics requires a massive logistical pivot. They call it Agile Combat Employment, or ACE.
Right, because you can't just group everything together anymore.
Exactly. To survive the 2027 Davidson window against China, the U.S. knows it can no longer just park hundreds of aircraft on giant, fixed super bases in the Pacific.
We're just too vulnerable to a Chinese missile barrage.
Right. ACE means dispersing forces constantly across smaller, remote dirt airstrips and highways,
yeah.
Moving unpredictably. So the enemy's kill mesh can't ever lock in on a massive target.
It's a complete game of cat and mouse. So what does this all mean? Let's take a step back and look at the massive terrain we just covered today.
It's a lot to take in.
It really is.
Yeah.
We started with the harsh math of multi-million dollar Patriot missiles being depleted in the Middle East. We saw how that vulnerability to cheap tech is forcing Russia to completely reorganize its navy just to survive in the Black Sea.
Right, pulling back their traditional fleets.
We unpacked China's terrifying concept of a ride-hailing inspired AI-driven kill mesh. And we ended with the U.S. attempting to reinvent the air campaign by hiding exquisite weapons inside clouds of expendable drones, all while racing to fix a critical readiness gap before 2027.
The defining characteristic of military power has fundamentally shifted. It really is no longer just about who has the most advanced engineering.
No, not at all.
It is about who can balance those exquisite platforms with massive, cheap, autonomous volume. And this raises an important question, one that really brings all these threads together.
What's the question?
As both the United States and China race to integrate artificial intelligence into their targeting loops, and as both prepare to deploy vast clouds of autonomous drones, what happens when a U.S. AI system and a Chinese kill mesh clash over the Pacific?
Wow. If algorithms are matching weapons to targets and pulling the trigger faster than the human brain can even process the battlefield telemetry, have we created a future where massive global conflicts are fought, escalated, and decided in a matter of seconds, entirely out of human hands?
That is the reality we're accelerating toward.
It is a chilling concept to leave you with, but an absolutely essential one to ponder as these technologies move off the research pages and onto the actual front lines. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this helped you cut through the noise and understand the mechanisms driving the headlines. Keep questioning, keep learning, and stay curious.